Welcome back to Red Flags Rising. My name is Mike Heineke. I'm the co-chair of Hugh Sippert & Reed's Sanctions, Export Controls, and AML Practice Group. With me, as always, is my co-host, Brent Carlson, director at the Berkeley Research Group. And we have a special guest with us today, Tom Blass from Dow Jones and World ECR Magazine. Brent, Tom, welcome. I hope you're both doing well.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be here.
Tom, you know, we've had the pleasure of knowing you for several years now. Your publication, World ECR, is a mainstay in the sanctions and export controls and AML community. We've had the opportunity to publish some of our articles with you. We thought it would be really interesting to our listeners to benefit from your perspective of what you've seen in your career and from the publishing and also the policy and the legal side over time and where you see things going in the next couple of years.
Thanks, Mike. I'm the co-founder and editorial director of World Export Controls Review. Myself and Mark Cusick, whom many of you will also be familiar with, founded World ECR back in 2011, 2012. My professional background, such as it was up until then, had been in legal journalism. Earlier, I was working for a political risk consultancy, and that gave me a sort of insight into, I suppose, the interface between law and foreign policy issues and larger geopolitical issues. I thought that there was possibly a gap in the market for a publication that would help people understand what this interface looked like and what the regulations were. We knew very little about sanctions and export controls at that time, other than the fact that they existed. But the community, the compliance community, was very receptive to the idea of a journal and was incredibly helpful, really keen to help us understand the lay of the land. At that point, Iran was really the big issue. I know that somebody that we spoke to said, well, you know, here's the thing. And this was 2011, I guess. The US and Iran are going to do a deal soon over the nuclear program, and then you won't have anything to write about anymore. But, you know, it'll be just for the next year or so. Why not do it? So there we go. The other thing was that we kind of walked into export control reform. That was a big learning curve because it meant we had to get to grips with what export control reform was, and that meant understanding what export controls were and the civil list and the military list and series 600 and the rest of it. So that was definitely a baptism by numbers, I guess, or baptism by legislation. From there to here, I suppose the stepping stones, if that's not too trite a term, have been, you know, there was the Arab Spring, political change in North Africa and Libya, the death of Gaddafi, political turmoil in Egypt, the invasion of Crimea by Russia. And then later, the new concerns about China, or sort of more finely focused concerns about China and emerging technology. So in that time, we've really seen the sort of national security ambit of concerns grow, sanctions and export controls very much in line with that or part of that. As I'm sure all your listeners know, it's been a very interesting time, the last decade or so in this space, and certainly given us a lot to write about.
I hadn't heard that full story before, Tom, so it was really interesting to me, and I think you nailed it with identifying that gap. We see it still today in Washington. Brent and I were at a conference just the other day where I think I was probably the only lawyer there.
Mm-hmm.
There is this big disconnect still, I think, between the national security policy community, people who are setting the policy, thinking about history, economics, geopolitics, national political objectives, how to achieve those, and the legal thought about, well, what mechanism do we actually have in place to use the courts, to use the executive branch to enforce these laws? Oh. Is that going to be effective? What is really the enforcement mechanism that we do have? Do we need to improve it? Do people know how to use it? Are we communicating to the affected or regulated community that we now have this tool and we're going to use it? Brent and I see a big gap that we've been thinking about and talking about as well. Brent coming from Berkeley Research Group and really having a handle on what boards and C-suite managers need to hear and need to understand in order to properly evaluate their company's risks in this environment. And then bringing that legal side of it is where I come in. It was absolutely right to identify a gap there. You recently had a transaction with Dow Jones. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It was a very exciting move or development for us to meet the guys at Dow Jones a couple of years ago and see that they had an extraordinary array of product offerings helping people to do business in a compliant manner. We've been part of Dow Jones for 6 months now. It's been exciting for Mark and I to have colleagues. We have some great freelancers who all came on board with us as part of our team. time, but now we have colleagues all around the world. So there's been a lot of ideas sharing, a lot of diffusion of editorial ideas and ideas for how we can keep up with the demand for information. So that's been very exciting. One of the things that occupied some of my time is working with colleagues on a journal that was sort of launched around the same time called Risk Journal. Risk Journal really seeks to put together a lot of these different areas of risk, sanctions and export controls, but also the AI threat or the AI challenge, geopolitics, white-collar crime issues, into a place where people can really see them in context. So that's been great. It's interesting for us to look beyond the parapets of our own silos, if that's not mixing metaphor too far or too many metaphors. There's lots to watch out for on this World ECR and Risk Journal front.
I thought it was interesting to be part of Dow Jones. What a great sort of testament in terms of the area that you're covering and how important it is for global business today. All of us go through a journey to where we're at today. I liked at the beginning of your story where, well, it's okay, there's Iranian sanctions, there'll be a deal, and then they all go away and you won't have anything to write about. But here we are, sanctions and export controls are at the center of geopolitics, policymaking, regulation and enforcement, and business revenue generation today. What are some of the swerves that you've encountered along the way?
Well, I suppose the big challenge for us was we started out of nothing. We didn't have venture capital funding. We didn't take up loans. We weren't part of a large group. It was just two of us with our respective experience in legal publishing. So the challenge was to establish credibility. People were very, especially the legal community, because they were the easiest to find. Lawyers, you know, they put their names out there. Here's my number. Here's my email address. So
we do. Please call me. Please email me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's funny when you're in the US and you're driving along and you see these sort of big billboards saying, you know, have an accident, call me now. I've never seen a billboard with a sanctions.
Yeah, we haven't done that yet.
Not yet.
Not yet. But it may be on its way. The thing was how to establish credibility as a startup. We did it by realizing that we were creating a community. I don't think we saw it in those terms from the outset, but that's what we realized we were doing with the forums, for example. We invited people to come along and talk about their experiences of trying to comply with export controls and sanctions or give advice on it. So I think I'm looking for swerves. I think we've made incremental progress. We sometimes felt that we didn't have the editorial capacity that we needed to sort of meet that challenge, especially as the area grew. But now we certainly do. Yeah, it's been a very exciting journey.
The answers often are hidden in plain sight. The swerve is the incremental progress. Your journey with World ECR is the proverbial acorn that becomes the great oak. You were at the right place at the right time with a vision to put this together. There was a need in the marketplace, and now here we are today. That incremental progress, sometimes we don't see it day to day or step by step on that journey, but the whole thing is one big swerve.
Yeah, that's my thought for the day.
And you mentioned starting the forums and realizing at some point you were growing a community. The conferences and things you and Mark put on now are big events. You know, what was the very first forum? How many people were there?
We had a lot of people at the first one. It was at a sort of a venue near the Barbican in London. As far as I recall, the first year we only did London and then we moved to Washington. What was interesting was that at that point, you could cover sanctions and export controls in a couple of days. I'm not saying that everybody could go away saying, well, there was absolutely no stone left unturned, but it was still nascent. And there were people who were coming along because they were curious to know about what these things were or felt themselves part of a new community that was still growing. Now, I think that what we're trying to address is that people's compliance concerns are, in a sense, both broader and narrower. Context has become everything. So you need the context. You need the geopolitical context. One of the exciting things about starting the journal was always that the people that we spoke with and who were doing this had that kind of interest. You know, they had the big picture interest in what was happening in the world, what's happening in the Middle East, what's happening in Russia, what are the forces driving change. That's the big picture. The little picture is the kind of nuts and bolts of compliance, classification, who do you train, that kind of thing. We didn't realize how much there was to cover, both at our conferences and also in the journal at that time. We're still unraveling that, and that'll probably be reflected in the way that we look at programming events going forwards. The early, not error, but some missteps that we might have made with early programs was that it was too general. It's finding the right content for people and making sure it's relevant and pertinent to their compliance concerns, but at the same time, making sure that it's couched in a wider geopolitical or political context.
Tom, you made some great comments about context and the geopolitical world around us, especially in a situation like we're facing now, how we're in a world where there's regulatory and enforcement ambiguity and uncertainty. But we look at the greater context, that geopolitical context that's sort of driving everything behind it. From your perspective, how does that context then drive where that regulatory and enforcement ambiguity and uncertainty come in, and where people can see the signals of what might be coming where it's not black and white on paper?
I expect that because you advise companies, you have insight into their operations. They come to you with their questions. So I expect that you, being much closer to the coalface, you guys have a much clearer sense. We always feel like we're looking through a glass darkly. We're trying to sort of fathom it. So I think you're better placed to answer the question. But what I think is certainly true is that under the Biden administration on, for example, the Russia issue, the Ukraine issue, it was easy to look at the trajectory and the direction of travel. You know, here's the G7 and other countries who are aligned on this issue. And yes, for example, there was always the issue around sanctions divergence. We had a great quote once from a lawyer who said that where the rules are quite similar, there's a tendency to kind of assume that they're the same. And actually, they're not the same. But that creates a potential for sort of falling through the gaps of divergent regulation. Since the beginning of this year, things are quite different. There's a lot of uncertainty about the US administration's stance on, for example, Russia, or for example, lots of the world. That makes people, I think, uncertain where they should be placing their own compliance efforts. Because if you know what the general intent is, what the general trajectory is, and you know that your government and other governments are kind of aligned in these issues, I'm assuming it makes things easier. But where there's that kind of hesitance from the administration, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah, I think it leaves a lot of people hungry for analysis and insight, and publications like World ECR and Dow Jones Risk Journal are going to continue to be of interest to people trying to at least get a sense and form their own opinions about what's happening, but also, frankly, just have something to point to if they have a discussion with stakeholders internally about where should we be putting our resources and why. Much of your content is, like you said, broad and narrow. It is precise. It's well-sourced. People are expert in what they're talking about, but it does have this broader and more accessible perspective. You could take many of your articles and use those as a point of discussion with a board member, with the CEO, and say, see, this is where the trend line is, or this is what at least some other people are saying, and we should be thinking about this. Tom, there may be people listening who would be interested in contributing to World ECR or to some of the other publications that you guys have. What are the types of things that you look for in submitted proposals? Content? What are some of the things that you say, oh, this would be good?
Great question. I've always said that I don't know very much about export controls and sanctions at all, but I do know many men and women who do. In a sense, what my role is to find the people who know this stuff and provide them with a platform to write for us or to appear at our conferences. So I think that good content is something that takes an area of export controls or sanctions or something possibly contiguous to that, like it might be CFIUS related or looking at the wider sphere of national security, and explains it in some detail to people who have an interest but not necessarily a specialist knowledge of that jurisdiction, and brings it to life somehow. You know, it says this is why, these are the consequences of the legislation, these are why people do or don't like these laws. Generally speaking, looking at articles that are kind of in depth but also accessible. We're not a specialist legal journal per se. We're not a peer-reviewed legal journal, but we have a lot of people who read us who are in industry, so they want information that is useful to them. We might run an article that's about a jurisdiction that people aren't doing business in, and they think, well, I'm not interested in that now, but I'll flag it for later when we buy that subsidiary in Brazil or in South Africa or in Malaysia, whatever. I'd be delighted to send an issue to anybody who hasn't seen it and to discuss our requirements for content. One thing to flag, I guess, is that, as you know, whenever there's a major change in law or policy, especially if it's US law and policy, then there are a lot of client alerts. A lot of law firms produce content in response, and this is our take. So, of course, we like that. But we also like things that have a slower burn. You know, it might not be an article that responds to an immediate change, but it still has a sort of long-term value and gives some insight into an area of compliance possibly underexplored or misunderstood.
You're doing, certainly from our perspective, a very good job at curating the content. And I know, Tom, you will take up anyone on the request to see an issue. We'll put your contact information in the show notes.
We made a very conscious decision that we would live or die by the editorial quality. It makes things more enjoyable and we have a better product for it. There's a lot for us to be covering. We very much welcome ideas. Mike, Brent, I know that we've talked about an article actually based on one of your podcasts. I think one of the interesting things is trying to fathom what we shouldn't cover, because there's a kind of mission creep in the national security space. Tariffs, of course, have become the sort of de rigueur buzzword. We have not covered tariffs before now, because we see that as a part of the world of international trade, countervailing, anti-dumping, that kind of thing. Of course, President Trump has put tariffs very much center stage. We'll cover them to the extent that they're relevant to our community. Of course, the IEEPA court decision, or waiting for the Supreme Court decision on whether IEEPA authorizes the use of tariffs, that'll be of enormous interest to our readers. But exact percentages, products, et cetera, we'll leave that to other people.
There is a value to knowing what your audience is most interested in and delivering value on that. What are you looking at in 2025 in particular for events?
In a couple of weeks' time, we have a one-day event in Brussels, Sanctions Practitioners Forum at the offices of Loens and Lerf in Brussels. We did this in 2023, actually. It was really interesting because, as you know, the EU, we're looking forward, if that's the right term, to sanctions package number 18, implementation across 27 different member states, all doing it quite differently. So this was a really great opportunity for people to come together and say, well, this is the way that Denmark is interpreting this rule, or this is what the German government has done in terms of enforcing it, and this is what circumvention means in the Netherlands. All these kind of things. This gets back to the sort of divergence question. A great opportunity for a community of sanctions practitioners to share their understanding, and useful as well. Towards the end of the year, we have our normal London forum, Washington, and we're looking at putting on a one-day event in Silicon Valley, actually, around the same time. So that'll be interesting to meet a different audience with different concerns away from Washington. It's great fun going to new places and talking to people about their experiences, because otherwise it becomes quite sort of villagey, as I'm sure you know. This is the DC perspective, this is the London perspective. But what about outside of the capitals? Going forward, I think we're looking at opportunities to work with new colleagues on how we might sort of bring our respective strengths to bear in a multidisciplinary way. So again, looking at where sanctions and other areas of compliance converge or have adjacencies.
Well, all of that's very exciting. We would encourage anyone listening to check out your events coming up. We'll include some links in the show notes. I think that adding Silicon Valley is really intriguing. It is a different community, and it's a community that has existed for a long time in a certain ecosystem and a certain regulatory world, let's say, a certain regulatory world. In many ways, there are now these headwinds coming from some people in Washington that are very much against that. It might be upending that world a little bit. And in other ways, there's tailwinds coming from others in Washington, where you've got this really unique asset, talking about everything from the actual items to the talent to the expertise to the funding, where everyone sees its importance. The big debate in Washington is, well, how do we stay ahead of an adversary? Who is an adversary? Why are they an adversary? In which ways are they an adversary? And I think you see some different views even within the business community about that risk that then informs what at least is reported sometimes in the media about trade flows and business decisions. There's certainly not a consensus view on that. There is nothing more valuable than actually sitting and breaking bread with people to really hear from their experiences and their perspective what's driving them. If you take the view of humanity that maybe it feels like people are out to get you sometimes, but really they're living in their own perspective under their own pressures, and they're perceiving their own reality in a sense of just based on their life. Sitting down and meeting face to face with them is a very valuable thing. And to the extent that you and others are bringing together people in industry, people in government, people in the service industry, people in the publishing world to talk about this, I think that's going to lead to the best outcome, whatever it is.
These issues, they're always intrinsically international, but whereas it was really about the US legislation that people were very concerned about and US unilateral sanctions as well as the UN sanctions. But now the role that the EU has taken and that the UK has taken and the other regulators, Australia, and then of course Chinese counter sanctions and the Chinese export control regime, India and SCOMET. So it's much more internationalized now. It's a much more internationalized picture. So these issues around conflicts of laws, that's where a lot of multinational companies have a real challenge. It really has become quite more than just a kind of sticking exercise in that kind of way.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of different ways all of this could play out. And one of them could be a really violent separation of the world into multiple trading blocks, right? Where it'd almost be impossible to comply with, say, both US and Chinese laws at the same time. And we already see some of that, right? Because there are some prohibitions, for example, in China about doing things in response to a request from US authorities.
I really appreciate all your insights and listening to your journey, Tom. It's an inspiration for us all. I like your approach where it's not reacting to the latest thing that just comes up, but let's see what are some of those issues out there that sort of transcend and are perhaps underappreciated, or what may be a gray arena out there that people are just not fully grasping yet, and where taking a little bit of a measured longer-term view can be much more helpful, both in the short term and the long run.
What I'm also really interested in is the direction that the profession is going to go in, especially in industry, you know, the role of the export control professional. I know there have been sort of moves to try and create a sort of export control compliance profession in inverted commas, but when I speak to people, they say that given the amount of things that we have to do, it's a huge portfolio of different things. Some people coming at it from the legal angle or from engineering or from other areas of compliance. That's something to watch, I think.
That's actually a fantastic trend. And I was just at an event in Silicon Valley last night. We were talking about that evolution of the profession and how companies really need to create a chief trade officer role, just like we have chief risk officer now in this world of geopolitical risk, because these issues are multidisciplinary and they do need a bit of larger strategic thinking to connect the dots between these individual disciplines to be most effective to navigate the challenges today.
Everyone is trying to become a tariffs evasion or anti-evasion, hopefully, expert these days. More and more countries are adopting their own inbound rules, outbound rules, and certainly some of this bumps up, Tom, against it, what we all would characterize as kind of international trade issues, the anti-dumping, the duties, you know, that sort of thing. But people really struggle. Where I would expect the trade compliance profession to go is certainly what you both have described. I would also expect to see something that we did see, for example, with anti-corruption compliance in the 2000s, early 2010s, where compliance professionals who are dealing with anti-corruption compliance sat within organizations was very disparate. I remember doing a benchmarking for somebody in, gosh, it was probably 2006. I think I'd just gotten sworn into the bar about, was it in finance? Was it in supply chain? Was it in legal? Was it by itself? Where was it exactly? Was it in sales? Was it in strategy? Was it reporting to the people who were also running the agents through whom bribes are being paid in the worst case scenario, right? Over time, in part because I think US government guidance pushed it in this way, but also a recognition of the importance of legal risk analysis in kind of making the overall value proposition for this type of work. More and more of that went underneath the general counsel, underneath the chief legal officer. If companies had a separate ethics function, maybe it was there. So legal and ethics, legal and compliance, ethics and compliance either was created for that type of work or that work migrated to those areas. I would expect we see something like that in some way, at least someone who, as we've been talking about, could connect the dots between these different silos, because you still need to have that expertise. No one's expecting that people won't have to do item classification in 2026, right? So you still need to have people with that technical capability to do that and to do that well. Keeping everyone in silos is going to lead to gaps and then lead to risks. I think people are going to put something as an umbrella over that to try to make sure that information is being shared and that people are assessing risk correctly. Well, Tom, this leads us to our popular segment, Brent Carlson's Managing Up. Brent, we've had the pleasure of speaking to Tom today about a variety of topics and how we've seen things change over the last several decades. What's your Managing Up thought for this episode?
Knowledge is power. Power to see how things are changing, power to see new opportunities ahead, and the power to build communities to help make us all stronger and take advantage of those opportunities. And the World ECR is a great source of knowledge.
Amen. I feel like I need to say amen after that.
Great. I was about to say it. You said it.
Amen, amen, leho humin.
Good stuff. Great fun.
Yeah, we're just in episode 15, but taking on a bit of a religious aspect.
Yeah, we are on a mission.
Well said, Brent. Tom, thank you so much for spending time with us. It's always a pleasure to speak. We will include in the show notes everything you would ever want to know about World ECR and Tom. Brent and I are very happy to be part of the community that Tom and Mark have really done an amazing job to create. And it's strengthened the community that helps everyone kind of get through what many times are very difficult day jobs. Really sitting on the front lines of national security, not by choice or by design, but by decree from our respective government. It's well worth the time to check out Tom's publication. Tom, thanks very much.
Well, Mike, Brent, thank you very much. It's been lots of fun and always great being in touch with you guys. And also just a big thank you to that community, because it's a very supportive one, it's a very humane one, and it's intellectually curious. These are all wonderful qualities. We wouldn't have been able to have got to where we are today were it not for those qualities. So thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
You're most welcome. And Brent, thanks to you as well. As always, it was a pleasure. Be well.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Mike. Be well.